Good day, and welcome to the Vistin Pharma third quarter presentation call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to the CEO of Vistin Pharma, Kjell Erik Nordby. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. The third quarter presentation will be held by myself, Torbjørn Kjus, Head of Energy Trading, and Gunnar Manum, the CFO. The presentation and the Q3 report has already been published earlier today. So in case we refer to specific slides on the presentation, I will tell you about that. So we start with the highlights for the quarter. Our pharmaceutical sector has enjoyed also a solid revenue growth in the third quarter, following also a strong revenue growth in the second quarter. The revenue came out at 51.7 million for the quarter versus 46.7 million for the same quarter last year. The sales volumes are marginally higher than the volumes in Q3 2017, which is also then is a customer mix that actually result in also this kind of short discrepancies between volume growth and revenue growth. Still, the facility, the production is running at full capacity. And the EBITDA for the pharmaceutical segment came to 4.9 million for the quarter. Energy trading, I will just take the highlights, and then Torbjørn will go more into the status and more background behind the energy trading activities. The EBITDA was negative 2.4 million for the quarter. That also included a calculated share option cost. So the unrealized financial loss on oil derivatives Norwegian kroner 2.4 million for the quarter. So in total for the financial, the EBITDA for continuing operation came to NOK 1.8 million for the quarter. Also during the quarter, we have listed or Vistin has been transferred from Oslo Access to Oslo Børs, and still we enjoy a very strong cash balance. Although at 30th of September, that was 330.6 million, and we have no interest bearing costs. Also, going to slide number 5 and 6 in total, Vistin Pharma is operating in a growing market. Both the diabetes 2, which is the main indication for the treatment with metformin, is growing rapidly, which is and the WHO expects that the number of diabetes patients will grow by 50% in the coming 20 to 30 years. On top of that, metformin is still the gold standard treatment for diabetes 2. There are new products also being launched and coming to the market, which are combination products, but they all include metformin as part of the drug delivery system. So we also expect that the demand for metformin will grow in parallel with the incidence growth of diabetes 2. In slide number 7, if you have that in front of you, otherwise I'll tell you that the sales volume for the third quarter was 813 million. Which is slightly higher than in 2017. We are currently running an efficiency program to stretch the capacity to with another 300 to 500 metric tons. However, that the benefit from that investment or the stretch initiative will not start to materialize until 2019. We have already informed in our second quarter presentation that we are investing in a new fully automatic packaging line, which we expect to install late Q4. That installation will mean that we have to close the manufacturing plant for some weeks and reduce the production capacity accordingly, approximately 200 to 300 metric tons. So I think that's the main information that we can give about Vistin Pharma for the third quarter, and then I leave it to Torbjørn to walk you through the trading.
Yes, thank you, Kjell-Erik. So on the trading side, we made quite clear when we started this unit that we're not a regular trading shop. We're not trading in and out of positions, at least in the setup that we have now. So in our setup, we're looking for special situations, basically trying to identify the situations in the oil market where the risk reward is skewed to the upside. We had a good track record in identifying special situations in our job in DNB, and we're now trying to do the same here in Vistin Trading. And of course, the first really interesting situation that we have identified is the IMO 2020 shipping change, where the sulfur allowed to be burned in the global shipping segment is going down from 3.5% to 0.5%. Now, in the beginning, when this was decided in October 2016, not many people paid attention. But this is really the largest fuel specification change that has ever hit the global oil market. And of course, there are enormous amounts of trades that you can put on in this around this theme. So the background is that already in 2008, the International Marine Organization decided that sulfur is going down to 0.5% in 2020. So that was actually decided already in 2008. But then along the way, it's been several opportunities to postpone the implementation. And a lot of studies was ordered by the IMO. And at the end of the day, in October 2016, was the last chance to postpone the implementation. But it was decided that it's not going to be postponed, and really the key element is that this is environmental problems around the sulfur. On the IMO website, you can see that they're themselves describing that 570,000 people would die because of sulfur emissions if the implementation was postponed to 2025 instead of 2020. So the starting point is environmental regulations. And of course, this change is long, long overdue because shipping actually emits 90% of the sulfur in the transportation sector. 90% is coming from shipping. And shipping itself is only about 7% of the transportation sector. So you can easily see that this was very long overdue. Now, this week, the International Marine Organization has a meeting in London where the final piece is being put in place with respect to there will be no delay to this implementation. A lot of people thought it would be delayed. And also, it's going to be a carriage ban, which means that ships that do not have desulfurization capacity, so-called scrubbers, on board their ships will not be allowed to even purchase high sulfur resid fuel, that is the 3.5% fuel. So we think it's going to be very little cheating on this after we have the carriage ban that will be implemented in March 2020. So this is the backdrop, and of course this would not pose any big challenges if all the shippers of the world built desulfurization capacities on their ships, the so-called scrubbers. But we see that the time is running out for that. There's about 23,000 ships in tankers, in dry bulk and container lines alone. Those are the ships that mainly burn the high sulfur fuel. So in order for this to not have any effect on the global refining system, we would have needed to see about 30,000 scrubbers installed within the next 14 months. Now the scrubber count has now reached 1,600 for 2020, according to DNVGL, which is now sort of the the shipping industry's rig count, to put it that way. So we can now be certain that scrubbers will not solve this case by 2020. It can solve a lot of the problem by 2025, but not by 2020. So that means we have to talk about refining and refining system. Now, how can the refining industry come up with enough on-spec fuel? That's only 0.5% sulfur. And if you look at the refining industry today, they produce about 7 million barrels per day of residual fuel. Now, half of that is spent or is consumed in shipping. So shipping is about half of the high sulfur fuel oil produced today. It is a loss-making product for the refineries. They lose about $10 to $20 per barrel by producing residual fuel. So if it was easy to not produce residual fuel, they would have stopped producing it a long time ago. But it's not easy to not produce it because not all refineries have the capacity, the upgrading units on the other side of the distillate tower. You put in the crude into the distillate tower and then it flows further into the upgrading units. And at the end of the day, if you have a hydrocracker and or a delayed coker, you might end up with no residue fuel. But not enough refineries have that equipment. And that means we have a problem here with the timing because the refineries only have had about 3 years to prepare for 2020. And for them, you know, to build a new hydrocracker, if you do the planning and the engineering and the licensing and then build it, it's a five-year lead time to build a new hydrocracker. It costs, for an average-sized refinery, $1 billion investment. So very few investments have been made from the refinery side because of the IMO 2020 decision. Because when you build a new hydrocracker, you need to have a view on the cash flow for the next 20, 30 years. It won't be enough to see a diesel spike that lasts only a couple of years. So that's why we basically have to trust the existing setups and the investment that was already decided before IMO 2020 decision really came up. So what we get of new capacities on hydrocracking and delayed coking globally, those are investment decisions that was made actually before the IMO decided on the new sulfur rules for 2020. And basically the investment that we have done in trading is to exploit price differentials that we think will be arising between high sulfur products and low sulfur refined products. Generally, we think the spreads between those prices will blow up in 2020. And of course, we are utilizing the oil derivatives market to put on these positions. And we have built some sizable positions through contracts in the oil derivatives space. They are not meant to be traded in and out of. We have to wait for basically 2020 to see the final result of our analysis. The whole thing comes as a result of the imbalances in the global refining system. The key challenge is we need to produce a lot more diesel products, both for direct consumption in the shipping space, but also for blending. You blend up diesel with high sulfur fuel to get down to the 0.5%. But at the end of the day, you will also be stuck with too much residual fuel, the high sulfur fuel oil, where there's no new market for that. The only remaining market for high sulfur fuel oil, we think, will be power generation. And it won't be power generation in Japan or in Europe because of environmental regulations. It needs to reach the markets in Egypt, in Cuba, in Ukraine, and those kind of emerging markets. Might have to price then to compete with coal prices. So for a couple of years, we might see a disconnection with the correlation with the crude market for that product. So the story that we think we could end up with a repetition of 2008, where the world scrambled to produce enough diesel, in the spring of 2008 because of imbalances in the global refining system. Then the margins for producing diesel went sky high up to $40 per barrel, And you had a mirror in the high sulfur fuel oil market where those margins fell to minus $40 per barrel. And the spread between those type of products reached more than $700 per ton. And that's why we think also it's beneficial, of course, for those shipping companies who have secured scrubbers for delivery in before 2020 starts. So that's basically the type of positions that we are building now to exploit 2020, the IMO 2020 change. And every quarter there's market to market that we have to book on these positions. Doesn't mean that we have realized any losses or gains, but we have to book the market to market values. And of course, as of now, several of these contracts have a tenor that doesn't expire until 2020. So that means they're not necessarily so traded yet by all the participants in the market that we expect will participate when we get to 2020. So there's some speculators, of course, and you have some hedging, for example, from shipping companies who have built scrubbers and just basically hedged the payback time for that scrubber. But we think we will have to wait until 2019 before really the liquidity picks up in some of these positions. So with that, I think I can hand it over to our CFO, Gunnar Manum.
Thank you. And I'll repeat some of the key financial numbers. We had total revenue and income of $52.5 million for the quarter, compared to $46.7 million last quarter. And I refer to page 16 of the presentation. As Kjell-Erik mentioned, the volume was approximately in line with last year, but we had marginally higher prices and also had a slightly higher volume of DC-grade product. That contributed to the higher revenue. The EBITDA for the pharmaceutical segment was 4.9 million compared to 5.5 million last year. And the energy trading segment had a negative EBITDA of 2.4 million, which includes share option costs of 1.2 million. Now, the energy trading, as you know, was established in the second quarter this year. Finance expenses of 4.3 million, which includes then an unrealized loss of 2.4 million relating to the derivatives that Torbjørn has mentioned. The net loss for the period was 3.2 million. And very quickly on the balance sheet, we have a solid financial position, and the cash balance at 30 September was 330.6 million, which includes 103.5 million in margin calls relating to the oil derivatives, and the company and the group has no interest-bearing debt. And then I turn it over to Kjell-Erik to summarize.
Okay, thank you. I'll briefly summarize this quarter presentation before actually allowing a Q&A session. In the pharmaceutical area, the metformin market is expected to continue to grow. We are in a growing segment. We also see attractive growth potential both from our existing customer base, but also expanding into new markets and customer segments. We will take advantage of that, and we will explore these opportunities by short, medium term to stretch the capacity by 300 to 500 metric tons, and then longer term, or it depends also on when sufficient volume is secured, to invest in doubling the capacity in our manufacturing plants, and then becoming one of the kind of dominating players in the metformin market. With respect to energy trading, we see several other interesting opportunities that will be further developed by Torbjørn and his team. So thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, if you have any questions, please press star and then one. There are no questions in the telephone queue at this time. Sorry, we now have one question in the queue. We'll now take our next question from Borg Anderson. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, guys. Thanks for the presentation. My name is Borg Anderson. I'm a shareholder of Wisden. Is this presentation being recorded?
Yes, it is.
Could you then put it up somewhere, either so other people who weren't able to listen to it at this time could listen to it through phone or on SoundCloud or elsewhere?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was all.
Thank you. As a reminder, you can press star and then one to ask a question. It appears there are no further questions in the queue at this time. There are no questions in the telephone queue at this time. I will hand it back to our hosts for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. As there's no any further questions, I thank you for listening into this third quarter presentation, and then we finish the call. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.